Hello, everybody. Welcome to the session in the Commonwealth Salon. I heard someone called the Commonwealth Saloon. I think it's a salon, not a saloon. Although I don't think that's have a bar in the back. The first group that's going to be speaking today is Julie Allenson from York University and Richard Green from Hall University. And they're going to be talking on HIDRA, research data, and archive matter.
Hello. Please shout it if I start putting the microphone over here. So, Richard and I are going to share the presentation, so I'll run through the first few slides and Richard will take it to the end. We're going to talk about a project that we've been doing over the last couple of years related to digital preservation for research data. So just to sort of start with a basic overview, why do we need to preserve research data? Well, it's often unique and irreplaceable. We may need to be able to validate those conclusions that have been published. There may be a high level mandate to do this. So in the UK, there is a growing funder mandate for preserving digital research data, or research data, doesn't have to be digital, particularly EPSA, one of the major funders, has set out a statement of what people need to do to comply, and there is obviously then a risk of growing funding if we don't do this properly. And then also, of course, there's the good part of it, the maybe potential for reuse. It's good to open things up and make them available and to make sure they're preserved so they can stay available for the long term. So don't our repositories already do this? So in most cases, repositories do sort of medium-term curation. They look after things very well, but they don't necessarily have the services in place to do long-term preservation. Preservation implies the sort of actively taking steps to increase the chances of things being readable well into the future. So our project focused on Archimatica. So for those of you who have not heard of it, which is probably no one, Archimatica is a web and standards-based open source application which allows your institution to preserve long-term access to trustworthy, authentic, and reliable digital content. So it's also compliant with the OAMS model, and it uses standards like Premise. So We felt that York is a good open source tool for doing digital preservation, and we wanted to assess whether that would fit into our preservation workflows and whether it was actually usable for research data. So JISC, who are a major funder of higher education IT projects in the UK, they have this initiative called the Research Data Spring that launched in 2014, 2 years ago. So this was not a program focused on preservation. This was a program of projects around the research data management question. We were awarded money to look specifically at digital preservation. We called the project Filling the Digital Preservation Gap because we felt that there was a gap that people talk about preservation, but actually in many cases people aren't actually starting to do that yet. So this led to a three-phase project that ran from 2015 to 2016. We had to bid for each phase, which was a bit of a pain, especially in phase three, where they said, yeah, you have it, but you can't have it. Phase one was really around desk research. We wanted to assess whether Archimatica would work for research data. Our conclusion was yes, it would, with a few caveats. So there were a few things that we felt could be improved in Archimatica to better support research data. Phase two, we were able to fund Artifactual Systems, who were the company behind Archimatica, to actually make some changes. So there were different lots of work to better support research data. And we also worked with Pronom at the TNA National Archives in the UK. One of the areas that my colleague Jen and Simon Wilson from Hull are both very interested in is file formats. And if they agree, they can do a whole presentation on this. But research data often contains really wonderful file formats that the Pronom Registry doesn't does recognise. And so they'd be working with the programme team to do more for that recognition and also to think about how the community can better support programmes to have new file formats going forward. In phase three, we actually got into an implementation phase. So we at each institution got the concepts to demonstrate, with both of us using iDrive in quite different ways, but to demonstrate a full workflow life cycle for including our climatic codes. While the GISC data to spring projects have been going on, GISC have also been put together this major shared service in the UK. This is really starting to actually happen now. So this is really quite interesting in the UK. So what they're offering is very complicated and nobody fully understands what they're offering. But basically they're going to offer a managed and hosted service for research data management in the UK. And at the heart of that there are three core modules, and those are repository, preservation, and reporting. So they've taken the reports we produced in our phases one and two quite seriously, and they've been used to inform the requirements for the preservation modules. They also have different suppliers sort of bidding to offer the services, and they've chosen a set of suppliers for each of those three main modules. In all cases, there are both commercial and open source suppliers, and our Climatica is in the preservation module offering, and Hydra is in the repository offering, which is great. At the moment, there are 20 pilot institutions, of which we at York are one, and we'll be testing out the service over the next 2 years with a view to becoming a national service after that. So this is, it's quite exciting that from our little project, we've actually managed to implement something that can have a major impact in the UK. This is just a classic diagram. I'm not going to talk about it in too much detail, but basically those three main modules are in the centre there, and then around the side there are lots of other smaller lots that sort of provide the glue between those systems. A good example being there'll be a piece of work around large data, how to ship around large data. So for anyone who saw our posters yesterday, you can all be there. So we'll now both just talk through our actual proof of concept, and then I'll hand it over to Richard to talk about Paul's. So in York, we use Pure as a research information system, and so that's the place where we receive metadata about our data sets, and at York that's a given, so we weren't allowed to say no, we don't want to do that. So Pure is central to the work we were doing at York. Basically, we wanted to provide, given the metadata already in Pure, we wanted to provide an easy way for depositing data. We wanted to provide a way for the RDM staff at York to monitor what's happening with data sets. It's not a strength of Pure. It's quite difficult to track. With research data submissions, there's almost always some backwards and forwards with the researcher to clarify things to do with access permissions, where the data is stored, where they need a DLR. So we wanted a way of actually tracking and monitoring that progress. And the third way is a way of requesting access to data. And I'll come back onto that in a second. So, and two sort of givens in that, we wanted the data to be sent to Climatica or automatically for long-term preservation. We didn't want anyone to have to go into our Climatica interface and then click buttons. We wanted a fully automated process. And we would pull the data set metadata from Pure, so there's no metadata entry in what we're building. I won't talk through the diagram. That's on the posters, and if people want to talk to me in more detail about this diagram, please just grab me any time over the next 2 days. So, because of the time, I decided not to demo the application, but this is just a quick screenshot. So, we have a monitoring screen that includes information like this. So, we pull the metadata from Pure, either for a nightly job or it's possible to pull directly. So, if someone's working on a particular data set that day, they can pull that into the system very quickly. We capture basic metadata out of Pure and display it, and then we generate these two URLs at the bottom, a deposit URL and a request URL. At this point, we're already creating for objects, so we have an object for the data set, which sort of creates the link between where it goes in our Climatica and where it is in Pure. Again, just to reiterate, this is not about reinventing metadata as such, the descriptive stuff sits still in Pure. And then down the bottom here, we have this sort of set of status, and so we have like processing ticks to show the status of the data. When we receive a deposit from the end user, an automatic process is triggered, it goes through to Archimatica. Archimatica goes through various status, some in progress, completed, uploaded. So we track all that on screen so the research data staff can see what's happening. They can also see if there's been a failure, so they don't have to go to Archimatica to check that. So if something doesn't appear, they'll get a flag as to why and what's happened. Just quickly on the modeling side of this, I'm trying to do some work around PCDMs, so trying to model how this data set archival package files or relationship works. This is very much a work in progress, but I'd be very happy if people have comments or are interested to talk more about this. One of the things that it's not really particular to research data, but it's quite important research data, is a data set is often a complex set of folders with files in, and often the metadata actually sits in those folder names. So in Archimatica, that folder structure is maintained. When we pull the dissemination package from Archimatica into Pandora, we don't receive that folder structure, we just receive the files. So what we decided to do is not reflect the file structure in Pandora, but pass the file structure out of the Archimatica Mets file. So what the user sees when they go to access the data is the full folder structure that would have been in the original deposit. And when they download the zip file of that data set, they'll get that folder structure. But we don't have the sort of debt of lots of containers in Fedora. So I think that's quite a good approach. PCDM2 may also offer us some quite nice ways of modeling that whole structure without too much heavyweight creation of lots of folders and containers and things. So just the link, so the code is in GitHub, it works, but it's not polished, so we've got more work to do to actually make that more production ready, but it's a working application, and the data on the document is there if anyone wants to have a look at that and make comments. I'd be very happy for people to do that. Just finally, what's next at York? So we showed the application to our RDM staff and they said, when can we start using it? So that was really good, because when you rush into a short time scale, you have to kind of not talk to the end user quite as much as you'd like. So we took it to our RDM management team and they gave us permission to actually put it to production. So we're hoping to get this out fairly soon, around Christmas time. And the other important thing for York is we're still quite new to Harbinger, and this has been a really valuable exercise for broader questions around data modeling, broader questions about how we use Archimatica at York, how we implement what our architecture would look like. So it's actually been a project that really punched through its weight for us in terms of what we've learned through doing it. And I'll just hand over to Richard now.
Thanks, Julie. Just in case I don't remember to say this a little bit later, can I just re-emphasize Julie's point that these are very much proof of concept implementations. Therefore, if you go and look at the code, don't look at it too closely. It's got all sorts of rough edges, but it works. And moving that to a production system would be quite a lot of work we know that. Julie's been talking solely in terms of research data. If you came to Connect last year and came to see Tom's poster, Tom York's poster, you may have heard us talk about the fact in whole. Yes, okay, the GIST money was for managing research data, preserving research data, but in whole we wanted to come up with a workflow that would actually work for anything. And research data was just a special case, if you like. So that poster last year, what we've done is we've now implemented the sort of left-hand two-thirds of what was there on that poster. So what it looks like is this, in whole. All our users, staff and students potentially, have got box accounts, Dropbox, not Dropbox, it's the same. And what we're going to ask people to do is to create a folder within their Box account and assemble all the files they want to deposit. And to add to that, a very, very simple text file, right, can get copied if they wanted to, but it needs only be very, very simple, about four lines, that gives us essential metadata and describes what the user actually wants to have into that. And then, when they're ready, share that folder with a user called Archivematica. Now, Archivematica has its own Box account, actually, it's watching for new shares popping up. And when they do, it, Box Watcher, as we call it, analyzes what's in that folder and says, yeah, this looks like a valid set of files, we can deal with that or not. And if it can deal with it, it creates a bag, as in the bag is folder. And Archivematica knows all about bags. And so Archivematica will process that bag and create an information package which goes into the layout store. So that's our preservation one. The idea being that the preservation store doesn't get touched very much. We don't want to know what's in there. We have to curate that very carefully. It also creates a DIP, a dissemination information package, which we pass off to another bit of software, which is our last supposed to be very deliberately a black box because we're not fully satisfied at that stage. And now it does. And that essentially parses what's in the DIP and from it creates hybrid objects, as if by magic. Basically, what we're doing actually, so it's a proof of concept, it seems to have worked out very well, is we're parsing the contents of the Archivematica DIP and formatting that in the same way that the data would have come in if we'd done it through our manual web-based interface. And then we're just doing an HTTP post to the same endpoints that that uses. So the data's going in precisely the same route, gets exactly the same sort of treatment for enrichments and so on. And that gets injected into the existing repository quality assurance queue. And it's matched up to what's in the AIP store because we've got new UUIDs going into that metadata as well. The fact that the stuff is coming from the user's Box folder means we have all the information about the user that we can mine. So we've actually got a reasonable amount of metadata there. It looks a little bit rough. The quality assurance team at that point are going to have to do some cleaning up on it. Because, for instance, any potential download links are going to be the file names, whereas you might just do a bit more user friendly. But, you know, three options basically. The user can put into their folder multiple data, well, one or more data files and one descriptive file, in which case we get out a sort of AIP and a single repository object which may have one or more download instances. They can say, I don't want any of these files accessible, in which case it's a metadata only record, but at least we know the AIP is there. It could, their folder could contain multiple files in a CSV file, in which case we get multiple hybrid objects. Or their folder could contain another folder, and if it does, we think, okay, there's a file structure here, and we just zip up that file structure and then we'll the system goes to do anything with it. So any implementations of that file structure are maintained. We need, in whole, to take that proof of concept work in production PDQ. Next year, whole is what is known in the UK as a city of culture. It's a thing that goes around every 4 years, where a city beats with honour being the central point of their major cultural events. And our archives people got involved in this, and here is the letter catcher, all the digital outputs about the culture. It's our kind of talk, it says here. Okay. We were flattered, quite frankly, that we had our project recognised by the DPC Digital Preservation Awards this year. We're one of three finalists in the Research Innovation category. We should know, I'm looking at Chris, end of November, is it?
Yes.
30th of November. We're keeping our fingers crossed on that one. We're great, we've got this film. Project reports, Julie mentioned them in passing as she came through. And so the project, the GIST project, is called Film and Digital Preservation Gap. And if you go to and search for that, you can get the phase one and phase two reports, and phase three report, which we talk through the experiences of the proof of concept, so it should be there end of the month ish. And essentially that's it. Julie's given you the GitHub addresses for their work. There's tons of GitHub if you want to go look. But to recognise also Chris Orders, sitting in the audience here, and Jenny mentioned the digital archivist of York, and Simon Wilson-Hunt, archivist, who have put in an awful lot of ideas and contributions to the design phase of books. So that's what we've done. And I should recognise, it was on the slides, I didn't say it, it was being Richard Jones movies, that the whole of these very, very, very good cost shrives are organising people who can use that resources to do this on the time scale of the world. We found these out of cost shrives, we've turned our stuff around in 6 weeks.
So we have about 5 minutes for questions.
So it sounds like a lot of this workflow has been automated using Mabel. I'm wondering how many points does staff have to manually touch the process, as in like moderation or things like that.
I'll let you speak for myself at the moment. From Holt's point of view, Guy says yes, but I don't actually think Julie said this either, but I didn't say it, so we shouldn't. The archive writing process is totally automated and selective. Don't have to touch archive as the model work. So in Holt, in fact, staff don't have to touch it until it gets the quality assurance key. In practice, we may find that that doesn't quite work out, but you know, we're trying to minimise that early contact.
So, in the York example, there's two places. One is at the beginning when we're checking the status review, we send out a positive link to New York to the researcher. And then, what I didn't explain when I was talking is that when we get the deposit into our master like that, but we don't create the dissemination copies, we create them if someone actually wants them. I think it is that there'll be a lot of cases where the data just sits in the store for 10 years and no one then wants it. So at the point that someone requests that data, we have an approval step for the staff, we could automate that, but the idea there is we don't want to get it wrong if there are some reasons why we shouldn't make it available, so it's just a button to click, but it will be that transfer of it, but again, automated, so it's quite lightweight. Part of both our
So you're zipping it up to preserve files directly structure. How do you maintain, let's say, thumbnails or previews when you have that situation?
Our intention would be that if you've got a zip structure, which is only one of the three options, and that structure is meaningful, then really to be useful as a download, the only sensible thing to do is to give the people that structure. Because it may be the structure itself, as you interfaced with earlier on, the names of the folders may actually carry meaning. So we're just not going there, basically. If there's a structure, you zip it, you can have the structure. You sort it out yourself with that one. That's what the user has.
We have some people who take the opposite approach. We unpack the zip and then sort of reflect the structure back. We also don't store the structure in the door. But our capacity will create thumbnails referencing the file. And it will also create OCR text if it's OCR-able. And that's rolled into the data model. So you pull the dip back and you'll actually have that information within the door, which is explained.
Mm-hmm. just wondering, and the answer might be different for both of you, where in the Hydra stack does do the files go after it goes through the data processor, and how, like, where does the VM structure come in?
So the application we built is a system called Hydra Works. Could move up. We want to get to, I think, because what we were building was not really covered by standard integration concerns or Sophia install. It's mostly about that monitoring screen, that's the new bit, and that's completely different to the other apps. It's a Hydra Works application, but it can move up quite easily. So is that?
Yep, that's exactly.
The answer in the public is we don't, because our system goes to door three at the moment. But what happens is the files go to the base store, so that's they're using the word version tiles. They are as they was. Again, what we didn't say, it comes from the archive database, but what comes through DIP is actually dissemination box. So if there are TIFFs in there, you get JPEGs, if there are Word files in there, you get PDFs in there, and so on. And those are the ones that are university standard in our case, it's just part of the project file structure. Whereas the AIP actually goes to a quite different store, and I'm not entirely sure what that is. They might do that for more of a piece of file structure. But again, just to re-emphasize, it's a very much proven concept, and Peter Jim's point that because it's been essentially a rushed project for a very short time to get to do it, we have not talked to the users in Santa Barbara about how this ought to work. This is what we think the users will want and like. And it may not turn out in practice. You know, we may have to do changes, but we understand that. But this is where we are at the moment.
Sorry, we've run out of time on questions. I know there's still a lot more out there. We are going to now move on to the next group. We're going to take 5 minutes to get set up, give people time to transition if we want to go to a different location. So,
and Julie and I are out for the next 2 days, so do grab it.
Coming up there for whatever reason.